Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Milwaukee is Nancy Beckley, who's the president of Nancy Beckley and Associates. And today we're going to be talking about some issues in post-acute care. Nancy, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Hey, it's great to be here, Adam.
Great to have you. Now, the last time I interviewed you was way back in August 2014 for a cover story in Compliance Today, the HCCA magazine. At that time, I remember we talked a lot about therapists becoming compliance professionals, which you predicted would begin to happen in increasing numbers. I guess the first thing I'm going to do is hold your feet to the fire. Was your prediction true?
Hey, Adam, there are more therapists moving to compliance, and they especially want to get certified, especially in skilled nursing, because the conditions of participation have included a mandatory compliance program. You may recall for years I hosted that Friends of Nancy Beckley lunch at the Compliance Institute where newly certified therapists would join me. It's actually in recent years gotten almost too big to host a lunch. So I think we're going to continue to see more therapists move in with skilled nursing contract therapy companies, because they provide the therapy services to the skilled nursing facilities where they don't have their own therapy staff, and in smaller therapy private practices, kind of my specialty niche area, where the role of somebody in compliance may just be as a member of the compliance committee, or they may audit the charts and they may join other members of the compliance committee that are non-therapists.
Well, congratulations on getting the prediction right. And I got to say, it sounds like it's a very good thing for the compliance profession. Now, you've been writing the Notes on Post-Acute Care column for the HCCA magazine. And I have to admit, my attention was immediately grabbed in the October issue with your article, The Intersection of Civil Rights and the End of Life Care. I got a sense that you really wrote that out of personal experience.
Oh, yeah, boy, it really was. I read some issues that had come out from the Office of Civil Rights. They, as you know, they were issuing guidance early on in the public health emergency, easing enforcement actions, but at the same time telling providers they wanted them to exercise caution. So there was really no change in the law. But what we noticed was the OCR was quick to enter into settlement agreements in order to drop a complaint that somebody had filed with the Office of Civil Rights. And it's almost like record time. You know, for those in the post-acute world, a skilled nursing stay, whether it's for, you know, an acute episode of care, for example, after a total hip replacement, or somebody that is a permanent resident in a skilled nursing facility, you know, the comfort of family visitations, you know, recreational activities, therapy, the community meals, and even bingo have been lost, you know, along with a sense of personal touch. You may recollect, Adam, seeing the picture that was widely distributed around the country of family members visiting at the windows of nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Gosh, it was so heartwarming and heartbreaking. Well, the OCR came forward with two resolution agreements that I focused on in the column in October that you just mentioned, and resolved allegations of religious discrimination and allegations of discrimination against persons with disabilities to have reasonable access and support. So I felt very passionately about both of these based on my background. In June, the first item that was addressed by the Office of Civil Rights was called OCR Resolves Complaints After the State of Connecticut and the private hospital safeguard the rights of a person with disabilities to have reasonable rights of access to support person in hospital settings during COVID-19. I don't know if they're getting credit for all of those words, but it's a lot to spit out here.
It is a long name.
The complainants in that case alleged that without support persons, that specific patients with disabilities in Connecticut facilities were being denied equal access to medical treatment, effective communication, and therefore the ability to make informed decisions, as well as to provide consent. So, you know, as a therapist with extensive experience in working and advocating for the handicapped, very early in my career, I was able to sit on, you know, the Mayor's Committee on Employment of the Handicapped in Tulsa, and as well as the Oklahoma Governor's Committee on the Handicapped. And now I'm writing and interpreting and drafting policies for therapy professionals related to their compliance with Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act. in part to address, you know, how do you work with the physically, visually, and hearing impaired and ensure that compliance with those patients that have limited English proficiency was met. This ringed odd to me, and I kind of wondered in the situations, was nobody at these facilities using common sense? Everybody was pointing to the rules, but there didn't seem to be anybody overseeing that a common sense thing was taking place. The next issue had to do in Maryland, where the Office of Civil Rights resolved a religious discrimination complaint regarding a patient that couldn't receive religious care. The complainant alleged that a patient's request, that was her husband, for a priest to pray with her husband, also was a patient in the hospital's intensive care unit, was denied. And you know, Adam, I read that settlement, as we read all the things that come out when you're on the listserv from, you know, the Office of Civil Rights to send you their updates. I couldn't sleep that night. I really found myself writing an article, this article right here in October, in the middle of the night. I finally got up, stepped over to my office, got to my computer, and just started writing the article. You know, in the past few years, I lost my mother and my brother, both in facilities, and both were able to have final rights. You know, as a Catholic, I wouldn't have really been able to live with myself if my sister and I were not able to ensure religious freedom and that last rites be available through our pastor. And, you know, for other people of other faiths, I'm sure it's important for them to ensure that their faith is honored and their loved ones have the ability to seek religious guidance and support rituals at the end of the life. So this was something that just struck me really pretty deeply. So that's hence why I got up in the middle of the night and wrote that article.
So what exactly was in the settlement from OCR?
Well, they resolved the, you know, complainant's allegations, you know, I guess in a friendly sort of fashion that basically is going to allow that people can have a religious support system, support them at the end of life and be able to come into the facility.
Well, it sounds like something people should read, given, you know, the situation with so much visitation restricted, and be aware of this sort of exception to it. Now, for therapy and post-acute care providers, what compliance tips would you offer for this time based on what you're seeing going on?
Well, this is really an incredibly relevant question that you're asking this, Adam. Just in the past couple of weeks, I have been contacted by, in this instance, two different physical therapists that wanted to get into compliance. That's what really somebody wants to know. So I'm going to come at it from that perspective is, you know, compliance professionals that are working full time probably are, you know, taking advantage of much of the resources being provided through the Healthcare Compliance Association, which has kept us all up to date with webinars and resources. But for that new person that's just bumping into compliance, I've actually found that the best thing to do is kind of give a little bit of a list. First of all, I tell people, if you haven't joined the Healthcare Compliance Association, join. It's incredibly affordable, and you'll start getting the journal. And there is the HCCA Net, which you can join. For sure, get the Compliance 101 book. It may seem like Greek to a lot of therapists when they read that, because I've had people tell me, I've read it, but there's nothing about therapy in it. Well, there's nothing about cardiac surgery in it either. I mean, it's the type of book that speaks to compliance. So you have to be able to translate it into your own professional language. And I always tell people to plan to attend the upcoming Compliance Academy and then be prepared to take the exam. And then, of course, I'm sure you'll like this, Adam. I'm looking desperately to go to the Compliance Institute. I can host my luncheon again. This year it's upcoming in Las Vegas, and you know, fingers crossed, it'll be a live conference, as really in my mind, nothing speaks compliance like the Compliance Institute in Las Vegas. I don't know if you feel that way about the Las Vegas meeting, but I certainly do. There's sort of a cachet about it.
Well, I do, but I have a conflict of interest in there, so.
Oh, what is it? Really?
I work for the association. Of course, I think it's the greatest.
Okay. All righty. Well, yes, I totally can understand that. And then for therapists, I think this is probably the best tip that I can offer. You know, there are seven different compliance element. Element number five is monitoring, auditing, and reporting. And that is a natural home for therapists. They're used to using chart reviews. In fact, many therapists think that that really is compliance if they know how to do a chart review. So getting into understanding, monitoring, and auditing and reporting is a great segue for a therapist to really understand healthcare laws, duty to refund money, need to potentially do a self-report, need to do an improvement plan. It's a great anchor point for a therapist. Then I also tell people, and this is my bias, Adam, I've got to tell you, read my therapy specific compliance articles in Compliance Today. And because I've written several in the past couple of years that are really pertinent, and those can be reached at the HCCA website under Compliance Today. Okay, my last tip is to read therapy specific compliance articles in Compliance Today, specifically to help therapists in compliance.
Let me close with one last question. You use an oft-quoted Charles Dickens line from A Tale of Two Cities about the best of times and worst of times when discussing changes in post-acute payments. How did you tie this in the April column to compliance? I think people would like to hear that story.
Yeah, I actually wrote that column in February. You know, when you're a columnist, you turn it in 2 months before. So that column reflected drastic changes happening in post-acute care for payment systems related to skilled nursing facilities and to home health therapy. So it was the worst of time for therapists. Many were losing their jobs because, you know, big nursing home facilities and home health facilities were cutting therapists trying to chase the right amount of therapy to do under the payment system. So there was a lot of people out of work, and a huge Facebook group evolved with 20,000 therapists wanting to join a union because of these cuts and the fact they lost their jobs. Well, the new payment models were not designed to cut therapy, but they were really designed to accommodate patients. So the best of times in that article for me reflected the opportunity for therapy compliance professionals and skilled nursing and facilities to have a rare opportunity to use compliance tools to sail the bumpy waters. For example, do you have a hotline or communication process for your therapists? Have you communicated a great policy on non-retaliation that you enforce if they come forward with concerns? And do your compliance people have the autonomy to listen to concerns and to conduct a valid investigation? To that end, it's the best of times for an effective compliance program.
Well, it's good to know that there's a best of something going on during these times, because certainly they're not easy. Well, Nancy, thanks for taking the time to talk to us and for all the writing you've done. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.